The Fleischmann's Yeast Hour, presenting a variety entertainment directed by Rudy Vallee.
My time is your time. Your time is my time.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Vallee and Company. We hereby award ourselves 4 stars in advance on tonight's show. The 4 stars, Mary Boland from Beverly Hills, now back on Broadway in the year's big musical bang, Jubilee. Josephine Baker, the exotic continental star who, returning to New York after 10 years to head the cast of the new Ziegfeld Follies, makes her first public appearance here on our stage. Eddie Garr, young comedy star of Thumbs Up. Will Aubrey, the bard of the byways, well and most favorably known to Pacific Coast radio listeners, making his eastern bow tonight. Boland, Baker, Aubrey and Garr. Mary, Josephine, Eddie and Will. 4 stars and, we hope, a 4-star show. Candy drinks my brandy, the most beautiful girl in the world. The most beautiful face in the world may be simple, but a dimple makes that simple little face the most beautiful face in the world. Social, not a bit. Ready, kind of wit. She'd shine anywhere. And she hasn't got platinum hair. The most beautiful house in the world has a chimney. And by chimney, neath that chimney, all my slippers are next to the ones that belong to the one and only beautiful girl in the world. Down below us in 49th Street, a police escort waits to rush Mary Boland through heavy traffic to her Imperial Theater dressing room, where she will shortly don the robes of a queen, just in time, we hope, to enter smiling when the curtain goes up on Jubilee. For the sake of Miss Boland's nerves, those of the policeman, and particularly those of Sam Harris, Jubilee's producer, who will be very nervous indeed if Miss Boland is late, we bring her to you at once, without further delay. And so, here's Hollywood's leading comedian, star of Broadway's biggest hit, the delightful Mary Boland. You will hear Mary Boland tonight in Three Cornered Moon, a comedy sketch based on the play that supplied Miss Boland with one of her funniest movie roles. She will be assisted by Ruth Easton, Ben Lackland, and Joseph Curtin. Our sketch is about the Rimpelgar family. Mrs. Rimpelgar, played by Miss Boland, and the grown-up Rimpelgar children, a very interesting little group, all, if you'll pardon the phrase, slightly nuts. The Rimpelgars are wealthy and careless. Since the death of their father, they have always taken money for granted and have done just as they pleased under the scatterbrained direction of Mrs. Rimpelgar. Scene, the living room of the comfortable Rimpelgar home on Long Island. Mrs. Rimpelgar enters, looking vaguely worried.
Elizabeth, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, come down, please.
Coming, Mother.
Oh, Elizabeth, I wish you wouldn't run downstairs like that. It's bad for growing girls. Upsets the digestion.
Oh, I've stopped growing, Mother, 2 years ago.
Oh, have you? I hadn't noticed. Have you been drinking your 3 glasses of milk every day?
Now, Mother.
Now, how long do you think you can go keep going on this way, running up and downstairs without any milk?
Oh, Mother. You sound as if I were a dairy wagon or something. Why did you call me?
Oh, now, what was it I wanted you for? Oh, yes. Where are Kenneth and Douglas?
Oh, upstairs, I suppose they were a few minutes ago. Why, Mother, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing at all. Things can't ever be as bad as we think, can they?
But, Mom, that does sound bad.
Yes, I think you'd better call the boys. I have something to say to all of you.
For our own good, I'll bet. Hey, Ken, Doug, hey up there.
What do you want?
A family conference. Come on down. Calling all Rimpelgars.
Okay.
Rimpelgars reporting. What's up, Liz?
Well, Mother has something to say to you, to all of us.
No, what is it? Hey, Mom, if it's about where I was last night,
Children, Douglas, Kenneth, and Elizabeth.
Well,
children, all I can say is we will have to paddle our own canoe.
Canoe?
Well, that's an interesting statement, Mother. What does it mean?
Yes, Mother. What on earth is it all about?
Oh, dear. Here, Douglas, read these telegrams. They all came today.
Please deposit additional margin. Your account warrants it. Margin? What margin?
That's just what I wanted to know. That was the first one. Read the second one, dear.
Good Lord. Ken, Liz, listen to this. You have ignored our request for additional margin. If we don't hear from you by delivery time, 11:15 will close you out.
Hey, it's 12 o'clock now.
Yes, I know. Isn't it awful?
Here, give me those telegrams. Now, we're all getting excited for nothing. We haven't any stock. They've probably gone to the wrong address.
Mother, have we any stocks?
Well, yes and no.
You mean we did have, but we haven't any more?
Mother, are we clean?
Mom! Tell us what it's all about.
Now, children, don't get excited. You'll all get nervous breakdowns. And please sit down. People always think better sitting down.
Listen, when and where did we get those stocks?
Oh, a long time ago. The year after Papa died, I think. Now, let me see. Oh, yeah, it was the year Elizabeth won the poetry prize. When was that year?
Oh, about 4 years ago, I guess.
Oh, was it? Are you sure? Now, let's see. When you won the poetry prize, Douglas was just graduating from Poly Prep.
And I was having my teeth straightened. Well, who cares?
No, you weren't either. This is after that.
For Pete's sake, what's that got to do with it?
All right, Mother, so it was 4 years ago.
Well, there I was, left all alone with you children to look after, and I wanted to plan a surprise for you.
Surprise?
Yes, so I invested $65,000 in some stocks.
Well, who told you to? Whose idea was it?
$65,000.
Yes, and then later on, about $40,000
more. $40,000 more?
Well, a man told me they were good stocks.
Well, who was he? Where'd you meet him?
Now, don't ask silly questions. He was a very nice man. He told me to invest in Three-Cornered Moon.
What's that?
Oh, dear. Oh, let's see. Yes, it was a mine or something.
Well, what kind of a mine?
Well, it was some kind of a metal mine. Oh, I remember he was a very nice man. And when he told me about these socks, he was most enthusiastic.
And what was the nice man's name?
Now, let me see. B's on the tip of my tongue. His first name is, I know his last name begins with an S. Silver. No, it wasn't silver, no.
Well, never mind the name.
Anyway, the stock was fine until the
fall of 1929.
Yes, how'd you know?
It started to go down.
Yes, I thought it would go up again, and it did. But then it went down again, and then up again, and I thought it would stay up, and it didn't. It went down again and stayed down. Then a week ago, Mr. Briggs, that was his name, Briggs.
Oh.
Yes, he called me, and he asked me to deposit more money, and I did. A whole lot more.
What?
Yes, and then this morning he called again, and when I went to see him, it was another man with a mustache. No, without a mustache.
Oh, my God.
Yes, you see, I found out my margin was, well, it wasn't what it should have been. And I was going to deposit more, but there wasn't any more left in the bank.
Well, what did you do then?
Well, what could I do? I'm not a child, you know. I know as well as anybody else when there isn't any more money in the bank. So I took a taxi home and had my hair washed.
So we're clean.
Broke. I can't believe it.
Oh, I have the queerest feeling here as if my stomach were falling.
Where, dear? Where? Show it to me. Is the sharp sticking pain in your left side? Now sit down, dear, and take your shoes off.
But I can't understand it. No money at all.
How are we going to buy food?
What do we do? We can't live anymore the way we used to.
No cars, no college, no clothes.
No money at all? Nothing out of all that? Why, Mother, it's impossible. Father left.
Oh, my poor children. Oh, I should have told you. I should have. Oh, why didn't I tell you?
Look here. What about this house? Can't we sell it? What do you think, Mother?
Well, yes, sick people do sell houses. Yes, I remember just before your Aunt Addie died. She sold three houses. Yeah, people do sell houses.
Yeah, but not this year. The house across the way has been for sale since 1930.
Yes, I know. Oh, what have I done? Oh, my poor children. It's all my fault.
Yes, cry about it now when it's too late.
That's right. Blame it all on me. You children never took any interest. Did you ever ask me how our finances were?
It was all left in your name. What could we do about it?
Now, wait a minute, all of you. It isn't all Mother's fault. She's right. After all, there's a house full of adults here. Now, the best thing we could have done was to have realized how incompetent she was and taken things out of her hands.
Incompetent? Why, I counted the laundry and set it out myself this morning.
Well, that's what we've got to do now. We've got to get organized. I'm the eldest. Now, from now on, I handle the money.
Well, is there going to be any money?
Well, there must be some money. We'll figure out a budget, and I'll open a checking account in my name.
Now, just a minute, children. Just a minute. I am still your mother, you know. And the mother signs the checks. What would the neighbors say if I weren't signing the checks?
They'd fill the streets with sandwich men carrying posters that said, "Shame on Mrs. Rimplegar." Rimplegar, the forgotten woman.
Now, children, no, I'm serious about this. I'm the head of the house, and I must sign the check.
Well, now listen, Mother. I have something else in mind for you. A really important signing job that you're going to like. It's just the thing for you.
Well, what is it? You know, it doesn't have to be checks, but I must sign something.
Well, in the first place, you're going to be president of the United Rimplegars.
Oh, now that's nice.
And what's more, every week I'm going to submit a report of everything we spent and everything we took in. And you can put your signature to it. Now, how's that?
Oh, that's nice. That really is. That's very nice.
And now, gentlemen of the Rimplegar family, we've all got to go to work.
Work? You mean find jobs?
Exactly. Don't you think that's a good idea, Madam President?
Oh, yes, indeed. Especially with all this unemployment going on. You know, everybody said the Depression would end with beer. So I bought 10 cases, but it doesn't seem to have done much good. Of course, we'd still be all right if I could only find that key.
The key?
What key?
Well, Mother, whatever do you mean? What key?
The key to the song box. It's got bonds or something in it. Your Aunt Addie left them with us, and she passed away. I think it was bonds.
You think it was bonds?
Well, there were some bonds 2 years ago when I lost the key. If I had the key, I would have opened it and sent the bonds to Mr. Briggs.
I'll bet you would. Mother, where is the box?
In the kitchen. It's in the ice chest. I thought that would be a safe place for it.
Ken, go get that box. And bring Jenny's meat cleaver with it.
Righto, I'm in the house.
Mother, why on earth didn't you tell us about this before?
Well, Elizabeth, you didn't ask me. And besides, I'm not quite sure there are bonds in it. It may be Aunt Addie's cashmere shawl. I can't find that either. It's a very valuable imported shawl that your uncle...
All covered with letters.
Now put it on the floor and knock it apart. Go ahead, hurry.
Children, you can't do that. You can't do that. It's illegal. It's Mayheim, that's what it is. It's Mayheim.
There, it's open. Look, there's something in it.
Papers.
Oh, gimme. Bonds. United States government bonds. We're saved by the U.S. Cavalry.
Hooray!
Now, how much is it? Let me see.
Wait. Mm-hmm. Oh, why, close to $300,000.
Quiet. What will the neighbors say?
Oh, Mother, look, we're rich again. We don't have to go to work. Look, money, money, money.
Now, don't be silly, child. Bonds aren't money. They're just bilateral.
Oh, Mother, you're priceless.
Thank you, dear. And now I'm going upstairs, and if Mr. Briggs calls up, tell him we've got some more bonds. I'm sure he'd be glad to know. And send Jenny up to me, won't you? I think I'll have my hair washed.
But, Mother, you had your hair washed only this morning.
I know, dear, I know, but it soothes me. Remember, Mother knows best. Now, bye-bye, my little chickadees. Oh, you better put the bonds back in the icebox. You can't be too careful these days.
By the Mrs. Seymour and Lonhurst, It's Dangerous to Love Like This. And by Messrs. Leslie and Burke, A Little Bit Independent, But Easy on the Eye. Thank you.
just want a little bit independent with your smile, a little bit independent in your style. But how can I help but love you ever a while when you're so easy on the eyes?
I don't know your name, but you're beautiful. Yes, you're wonderful. You're divine. Say you've made a great impression. Hope you don't think I'm too fresh. But you're so delish, you tasty dish, an angel in the flesh. Oh, I don't know your name, but you're sparkable, remarkable, mighty fine. If you think that I'm a sap, here's a cheek that you can flap. You can call a cop, but I won't stop till you fall in my lap. Will I go overboard for you? Throw out your line. I don't know your name, but you're beautiful. Yes, beautiful. Oh, be mine. Voice of Will Aubrey, Bard of the Byways, a pleasant voice and one that is very familiar to our West Coast parishioners. Will is an old-time vaudevillian and minstrel man. His easygoing, casual style is a decided relief in the midst of today's more frantic, pushing tempos. I've got a hunch that you're going to be very fond of Will Aubrey.
Thank you, Rudy. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. Inasmuch as there's so many singers who can sing these popular songs so much better than I can, I think I'll try something a little different. So I'm going to sing one of those beautiful Southern Negro spirituals. La cucaracha, el cucaracha. I beg your pardon, a little geographical error. I got in the wrong neighborhood, a little too far south. Here's the spiritual. Yanklod gigangen kreplach. No, I'm still in the wrong neighborhood, excuse me. However, if you bear with me, here is that lonesome road. I'll try and get it out. Look down, that lonesome road before you travel on. Look up, and seek your maker. Oh, Gabriel blows his horn. Weary, toting such a load, dredging down at that lonesome road. Look down, that lonesome road before you travel on. True love, what have I done that you should treat me so? You caused me to walk and talk like I never did before. Weary, toting such a load, dredging down at that lonesome road. Look down, look down that lonesome road before you travel on. I'd like to tell you all my favorite story. It's really not a funny story, but it's sort of educational, intellectual. It's about the king and queen. You know, in the olden days before they invented alarm clocks, the king and queen, being of royal blood, used to have their own royal bugler outside the royal bedchamber to wake them up in the royal morning. And at a certain hour each morning, he'd blow a bugle call, something like this. Of course, if that didn't wake him up, he'd wait a little while, and he'd pick up his royal horn, he'd blow another royal obbligato a little bit louder. There's no moral to the story. It just goes to show you what they used to think of kings and queens in those days. And some guitar players, too, I've heard it said. By the way, here's a little story that's been sort of kicked around and bounced around, but it's worth retelling. I mean the one about the Widow Smith. The Widow Smith passed away, and she went to heaven, and she says to the benevolent custodian of the gates, she says, could I rejoin my beloved husband up here? He said, certainly, madam. What's his name? She said, Smith. She says, we have so many Smiths. What's his first name? She says, Tom Smith. He says, oh, we have thousands of Tom Smiths. Couldn't you give me some other identifying characteristic? What were his last words? She said, I'll never forget his last words. He said, honey, I'm going to leave you now. I'm going to a better land. If I ever thought that after I'm gone, you'd ever kiss another man, I'd turn over in my grave. St. Peter says, just ask for Revolving Smith. That's what we call him up here. Of course, I've heard it told as Whirling Willie and all those kinds. It doesn't make any difference. But here's a little yodel song. It's not really a Swiss yodel, and it's not a hillbilly yodel. I'd call it an old minstrel yodel. I hope I make it. Roll on, silvery moon, guide the trail on his way, while a nightingale's song is in tune. I never, never move with my love will stray by the sweet silver light of the moon. Holy
WEAF, New York.
The Fleischman G Star with Mary Boland, Josephine Baker, Will Aubrey, and Eddie Garr. It occurred to us recently that you might like to meet some of the many backstage workers here at the Variety Theater, people who, week in and week out, help us put on this show. The first of these behind-the-scenes people we want to introduce is our engineer, the man who sits back yonder under glass and does remarkable things with a great many dials and gadgets. His name is Redfern, but nobody ever calls him anything but Red. Come out here, Red, and meet your constituents. Red, what is your full name?
William Warren Redfern.
A little closer to the mic, please. This is the microphone.
William Warren Redfern.
That's much better. Where do you live, Red?
Over in Brooklyn.
Dear old Brooklyn. And how long have you been with the Fleischman program?
About 4 years since we used to be over at the Times Square studio.
Do you enjoy listening to our show every week, and what's your opinion of the hour, your frank opinion?
Oh, I think they're pretty good.
Pretty good, eh?
Yeah, they're all right.
I see. Thanks. Just what is it that you do back there in that glass cage?
Oh, I ride the gain.
I know, you ride the gain. I've heard that before. But just what does it mean? Give us a definition of it.
I control the volume of sound and balance.
Well, now you've got to explain. Give us a definition of balance.
Well, for instance, tonight you were singing so close to the mic that I couldn't hear the orchestra. first, and afterwards you'll complain about no accompaniment. And your brass has been so loud all evening I couldn't hear the string section.
Brass been too loud? Did you hear that, brass?
All right, if you want to blow yourself off the air, keep it up.
Did you mean to say that we could actually blow the show right off the air?
Sure, and that would blow me out of a job.
We'll be very careful, since our fate is in your hands. Red, what did you do before you sunk to the depths and dregs of NBC?
I used to be a wireless operator on boats.
The boys were telling me that you had some pretty exciting adventures during the war.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. I got torpedoed once. A funny thing happened just before that. We left New York on an old German liner that had been turned into a transport. On the way over, the other operator and I were looking around the wireless room and discovered a clock-like machine with a key to wind it up. But as it had no connection to the wireless equipment, we couldn't figure out what it was for.
Typical NBC.
Each day we'd look at it and wonder, until finally curiosity got the best of us and we wound it up and it started going. So did the ship's whistle. This brought everyone rushing out on deck. You see, we were in the war zone by this time, and the blowing of the ship's whistle was a signal we had sighted an enemy submarine. After the excitement died down, and the captain found out no one had sighted a submarine, he came dashing into the wireless room and demanded to know who had started the automatic whistleblower. But of course, we knew nothing about that.
Oh, of course, NBC again. They never know, never know.
Well, on the way back, it so happened we were torpedoed without warning. And just had time enough to send out the distress signal. Luckily, we were only about a half a mile from the Spanish coast, and everyone was rescued.
Suppose you swam there with your clothes on. Well, that was very interesting, Red. And now, if you'll go back into your cave, we'll continue. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rudy, but watch... But I'm telling you, watch that brass section.
Okay, boy. Schubert's production of At Home Abroad, one of their loveliest tunes by Mrs. Dietz and Schwartz, Love is a Dancing Thing. Love is a dancing thing, gay as a May Day. I'm in the heyday of it. Love is a dancing thing. It's dancing my light heart away. When this entrancing thing came like a spring song, I heard the sing song of it. Love is a dancing thing, romancing my poor heart away. Thank you. So much comment was created by Eddie Garr's appearance here with Dave Friedman 2 weeks ago that we immediately arranged to bring him back in his own act. Once a nightclub doorman in the Roaring Forties, Eddie has risen to stardom in the nightclubs and the review theaters by virtue of hard work, a great talent, and an unusual intelligence. People who should know predict for him an important future, and we agree. This is Eddie.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that lovely introduction, too, Rudy. I'd have been here earlier, only I had dinner with a friend of mine. I invited him to have dinner with me at a restaurant, and I had to wait a half hour for him to pick up the check. But what a cranky guy. He wanted oysters. He says, I want some oysters. I don't want them too large. I don't want them too small. I don't want them too tough. I don't want them too tender. I want them cold. I want them right away. Waiter says, okay, mug. Do you want them with or without pearls? He was a Harvard man. But I spoke to this fellow a reason I'm out. His wife told me to speak to him about his drinking. He says he drinks too much. So I asked him, how much do you drink a day? He said, I don't drink much, about three bottles of brandy a day. I said, what? You drink three bottles of brandy a day? Doesn't affect you at all? He said, no. I said, you mean to say you drink three bottles of brandy a day? It has no ill effects on you? He said, no. He said, well, twice a day I've got to stop and go, ah! Otherwise, it doesn't affect me, he says. Otherwise, but I met a Scotchman tonight. I met a Scotch friend of mine. I met him over in England. I was over there this summer. He invited me up to his place. He says, come up to the Hoos. He says, I've got a nice place on 67th Street, 316 West 67. I'd like to have you come up some night. You just go to the door 316 and press the button with your elbow, and the door opens, and you get inside, and you'll see a lot of boxes with names on. You'll see my name, McPherson. You press that button with your elbow. Then the other door opens, and you go upstairs two flights to room 16. You press that button with your elbow. Then I'll let you in the door. I said, wait a minute. What's the idea? I press this button with my elbow, that button with my elbow. He says, for goodness sake, you're not coming up empty-handed, are you? A wee bit of Scotch. But I played a benefit not long ago, and a lot of the big stars were there. There was Harry Richmond, Chevalier, Tenor. Oh, nearly everyone was there, but no orchestra. The orchestra never arrived. Of course, for the benefit of the people who don't know what a benefit is, that's the show that's given for some worthy charitable cause in which the actors donate their services gratis. I'm glad to be on this program tonight for my benefit. But anyhow, at this particular benefit, as I said, all these stars were there. Well, the first one to come on was Harry Richmond. He said, good evening, all you charming and lovely people. I was about to sing a gorgeous little song entitled, I Married the Farmer's Daughter by Special Request. But for some indescribable and intangible reason, the song has been changed to Zing Went the Strings of My Heart, I'll say. So, Marie Chevalier was there, and he says, for Terry, that's the only song that fellow knows. And if you sing it, how can I sing it, eh? So, Joe Penner was there. Joe Penner, and he says, well, my Susan Bella's mad at me, and she wants me to sing that song. You know, I kissed her last night, and I forgot to take the cigar out of my mouth. So, I said, listen, boys, I paid that fella's taxi fare over here, and he's going to play the song for me. Well, just then a great big fella pushed his way in. He said, how do I weigh you refreshed? Ever hear of W.C. Fields? You're probably looking at one of the greatest opera singers that ever graced the platform. I sang an opera not long ago. It was called, it was named after a flower. What's the name of some opera's name? Oh, yes, it's named after a flower. It's called Samson and the Lily. A very pretty thing. So Lou Holtz came on. Lou Holtz came on. He said, well, my friend, it's time. I'll have a whole 58 like that. Piano player's an uptown Yankee little boy. He's not a Catskill hillbilly. He'll cut the song up into beats and shreds and pieces of sand. Chevalier will sing 8 bars. Richmond will sing 8 bars. Everyone will sing 8 bars if you'll be so kindly sad. Well, anyway, this is how the song sounded. Dear, when you smile at me, I have a melody. It calls me from the sound. Don't sing and saddle me. Now do the symphony. Sing when the strings of my heart. Just like a breath of spring day, I heard a robin sing about a nest set afar. All nature seemed to be in perfect harmony.
sing, and the strings of my heart. Why, no, I sang a song all the time. A Swanee River, well, my old Kentucky. What are you guys playing here? Say, this ain't a fit band for man to be. I'll cut my way through a wall of human flesh very shortly. Well, I love you. Oh, let's skip the whole thing there.
When the puck brings along with first to the catnip. Here's the catnip. So, what's the matter with the music? The music's not playing. You can't fool me. I'm too ignorant. I still recall playing the music. There must be some dispute with me. Well, I'm going to run around with Bach, and when I come back, I want to hear the music play. So don't go there. I still recall. Is that so?
To be sure, to be sure. You nasty man. Don't ever do that.
I still recall the thrill. I guess I always will sing when the sing of my
presenting for her first public appearance since her return to the United States, the sensational continental singing and dancing star, Miss Josephine Baker. I don't think anyone in show business has had a more vivid career than this remarkable colored girl from St. Louis. She went abroad 10 years ago as a chorus girl in Shuffle Along. Within 2 years, she was the reigning queen of the European music halls, a star in the Folies Bergères. Not content with her huge success as a dancer, she studied voice to such good effect that last season she sang the leading role in Offenbach's opera La Créole in Paris. She has returned to this country to be starred in the forthcoming Ziegfeld Follies. She sings for us first a new American number, Time Was.
I live in a penthouse with gorgeous things. My fingers are clustered with priceless rings. I star in a show and I'm in the know, for I'm everybody's heart like so and so. What joy out of life does that bring to me? Here is the lover I sing in word of me. I was when I lived in a shack and I had not a thing to put on my back. Time was when I was happy. Time was when I had not a care. Things all around me were free as the air. Time was when I was happy. Then this contentment came my way and taught me a game to play. Believe me, often I say, I did not mean to play that way. But time came when I hated my shack and I wanted some clothes to put on my back. Time is what it wasn't one time. Am I happy? Why should I be? How could I be happy?
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I am indeed very glad to be back and tremendously excited about being here with Mr. Rudy Vallée. I will sing for you now in French a number from a picture I recently made in Paris. The picture was called Princess Tam Tam and the song Le Chemin du Bonheur. The English title, Dream Ships.